Welcome to this episode of the Medical Affairs Professional Society podcast series, Elevate. I'm your host, Garth Sundam, and today we're exploring machine learning to understand audiences with Julia Matagulina, Product Solutions Manager, and Data Scientist Carlos Urrea, both from Digital Science. This episode is sponsored by Digital Science. Okay, so Carlos, we've chatted before about machine learning, and I think our audience, and I'll include myself in this, we hear a lot about machine learning and AI as a way for an audience to get information. That's how I use, in my very basic use of machine learning, I ask ChatGPT things. But we are talking about machine learning as a way to get information about an audience. So first, for today, are we talking about sort of identifying and understanding customer personas, or are we talking about machine learning to identify individuals in this digital space?
Well, hello, Garth. Nice to be here again. Thanks for inviting me. We can talk a bit of both. I know machine learning, well, now it's becoming an old thing now with all artificial intelligence and everything exponentially growing at a really, really fast pace. But yeah, so yeah, let's see where the conversation takes us. But for example, we're doing work, a bit of work on both inside Digital Science. I think we've previously discussed about, we had another podcast on like finding unicorns and key opinion leaders and digital opinion leaders, and how we match them, et cetera, et cetera. And that would partially answer your question on the personas. And the other part is like work such as segmenting audiences, like saying, for example, a group of cardiologists are all tweeting about a particular product or a particular study. And that's both bits of work that we are doing and developing at the moment. And on both, we are applying a bit of machine learning and steering and our way and developing AI capabilities too. I think it's a very, very interesting topic. And it's very, for me, it's mind-blowing how things are changing and new tools and new capabilities and more data it's showing up and how it's being used.
Okay. I apologize to ask this because it's going to show my lack of basic understanding, but I imagine that someone else that out there could use this same thing. Can you please, just as we get started, tell me the difference between AI and MI? And I know this is a basic question and I apologize, but just give me the context here. AI is replacing MI. What's the difference?
No, it's a bit of a blend now with the new AI. It's like this huge pool of data and self-learning capabilities that, well, everyone is competing about inside ChatGPT and Google and all the others and all the other competitors. Whereas machine learning can be like algorithms and model in a more simple way, but more specific. Okay. Whereas like artificial intelligence is something that you can almost near real time iterate and change, and having this, for example, ChatGPT, you can have these conversational iterations with it and it will update instantly, whereas with machine learning, at least the traditional way, this would involve more and more steps and sometimes even coding, etc.
Okay, thanks for that. And you can decide later whether we edit that out, but I just needed a little bit for myself, and I think maybe some other folks do too. So Julia, it's funny to start with the limitations, but this brings up, we're identifying individuals. So what can we do? What can we look out into the landscape and see? You know, what can't we do, and who decides? Can we find people's LinkedIn profiles and message them? Can we just know that someone's going to be at a congress and they go on our list of people we'd like to meet? Or what can we do when we're identifying audiences out in this space?
Hello, Garth. Thanks for having me here. And yeah, this is indeed a very interesting question. Being the voice of the customer here, because I, as a product solution manager as a consultant, work a lot with our clients who ask exactly the same question. How far can we go? How much data we can get about the group of people or individuals, like specific individuals? And as Carlos mentioned, it's a little bit of both. So we usually start with identifying more like bigger, larger groups of people, larger groups of users of our tools or audience online. And then some of our clients, they are absolutely fine with staying on this level, saying, okay, that this is already good enough for us to know who we are connecting with. We don't need to go deeper into individual profiles, like more personal details and personal information. Mm-hmm. On the other side, a lot of clients would like to know who of these big group of key opinion leaders, these healthcare practitioners would be probably the most interesting or the most apologetic for their products, who they want to connect to, talk personally, and maybe like learn more and collaborate with. And in this case, this comes the question of how much information we can bring on a personal level, right? So, and again, I probably won't have the correct answer on that, but like we have all these laws around how much the company can collect and store personal information, how far we can go, what we can actually collect online. And even with these new AI regulations that have been recently issued in European Union, right? I think that it's just important to keep in mind that whatever our clients want, we as a digital science, we need to be vigilant about like complying with our clients' requirements, but also complying with like legal requirements and all regulations that we have on this side. So saying that, yes, we can bring to some extent personal data to the conversation, but we need to also understand what is the limit to like having this data. Should it be the name? I don't know. Yeah, LinkedIn profile, X profile, phone number, email address. How much we can collect and store.
Gosh, I think I hear your drones circling my house right now. No, I I imagine though that
there's my aluminium cap.
Yeah, exactly. But I think I have one here somewhere as well. I think that sounds really useful for a company who just wants the information. And is it part of, you know, and I'll speak maybe more broadly than just digital science, but do you see that as part of the role of a solution provider to be aware of these guardrails and then also to make clients aware of these guardrails and limitations as well?
Yes, this is definitely a very important part of our role, both myself and Carlos, as customer-facing people at our company. And I think this is the most frequent conversations that we have. Well, first, like what is available, what we can provide, and what are the limitations of what we can provide.
Okay.
So that's something that we discuss quite often. And I think that there is some clarity on this side, but there are also like questions that has to be answered still, probably.
Yeah, and there's a lot of the conversation with clients, for example, like just because we can doesn't mean that we should.
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting one. Ooh, next episode, the ethics of the ethics of customer identification. Interesting. All right, but let's get into how we do this. So Carlos, you know, I'm thinking about maps and, you know, I know our CRM and we have people tagged in a couple of different ways. And, you know, we know if folks have maybe attended certain kinds of webinars or that kind of thing. But is that what a company needs in order to unleash machine learning into its people to create personas and identify individuals? Or is it just like, you know, a company can ask you for information on its audiences and you could just go out into X, you know, Twitter and find it? How does a company best prepare either data resources or CRM or whatever to use machine learning to identify audiences or understand audiences?
So when we talk about machine learning, at least like we use it, for example, getting like getting into like the KOLs, the key opinion leaders, and for example, what we do is use like dimensions data, and by dimensions I mean the research landscape information, and then we tag it along with Altmetric, which is usually the which is a platform for the impact of all this research. And that gives us access to tools like X and et cetera. So for example, one machine learning that example that we use was to be able to match their dimensions profile. So a researcher profile where you have listed all like, for example, let's say Mr. Garth published 10 papers in a specific therapeutic area. So we would find Mr. Garth on dimensions, mm-hmm. and then using machine learning with our altmetric capabilities, me and Mike Taylor, which you already had a couple of times in your podcast, we had this hypothesis that being me and him both researchers as well, that and we tweet about, well, shouldn't say tweet now, post about our research, we had this hypothesis that like a good percentage of people share their own research. So if Mr. Garth Southam published a paper and a Mr. Garth Southam a couple of hours or days later tweeted about the paper, they're very likely the same person. So, and using that, we managed to match more than between 500,000 to 1,000,000 researchers. And that's very useful inside the KOL field, because sometimes these key opinion leaders are also digital opinion leaders, sometimes on their own research, but sometimes on other people's research. And then this creates like a rabbit hole of who this KOL tweets about, and then are they a KOL as well, and who this KOL tweets about. And then we managed to find like very great, like this pool of key opinion leaders that share a lot about research, their own and others. And then we also are able to segment this by specific products or specific therapeutic areas. And that is where a lot of our clients find value in this data. Because, well, the data is there. It's just like using machine learning and other tools. We're developing AI capabilities to further develop this as well. But cool. To make sense of this data and basically turn all these like huge tables of information into insights that, well, say something in like quickly. So for example, they can use in their CRM systems, and they know get more information about this pool of people inside very specific and narrow fields or broad, whatever they want.
So that's cool. It sounds like you have, you know, the potential to offer a couple metrics. I can imagine you saying, you know, here's who's driving the research, and then here's who's driving the opinion about the research. And it sounds like a lot of the is a lot of the machine learning application learning who among the KOLs is a DOL?
Yes, like the probability, for example, we calculate like this probability of Mr. Garth Sundam, the researcher, matching Mr. Garth Sundam, the X profile, because sometimes they won't put their old name, they put like an acronym or a tag. Yeah. And then, for example, we used to understand if like Mr. Garth Sundam, the Twitter profile, is an oncologist or is a cardiologist and or is a patient or a cancer survivor, for example. And then we create like these groups of people that we can then like gather all the information and then use it in our metrics. Mm-hmm. So by, for example, doing this matching of profiles, we would be able to say like Mr. Garth activity as a researcher, like how many publications, how many grants, how many times has their own research been cited, but also like his social media profile, how many times has he cited has he tweeted about his own work or other people's work inside the therapeutic area, and what types of research does he share, et cetera, et cetera. And that's where we use like a bit of the machine learning. And what types of what what like his tweets and description tells about him. Like, is he an oncologist? What types of products does he work with? What kind of things does he post, etc., etc. He's basically creating this persona and getting a bit, making sense of all the numbers, bringing a bit of like qualitative data in, telling a bit more about.
Ah, the qualitative data too. So Julia, on the customer side, what are you hearing from folks about how they're using this? I can imagine. So Carlos gives me a list of, oh, I don't know, 1,000 oncologists in a certain therapeutic area who might be using a certain product. And then, Julia, what are companies doing with this? Or and also, are you getting questions from companies asking for ways they would like to use this stuff?
Oh, that's also a great and very diverse question. So first of all, and yeah, let's broaden this not only to, okay, we found these 1,000 researchers, oncologists, other doctors, and we want to see how they interact with our research. So I think, first of all, the great point that Carlos made, we have all this data that we retrieve ourselves, so we have access to it. And one of the key benefits that our clients find in our data is that they don't need to search for it again themselves, right? They have it there, and they can use it, and they can actually see, right, without like doing their own additional research. Okay, who is reading my, for example, I published an article, who is reading this article, who is talking about this article, both in academic space or in the social media. But another very important outlook, and again, this is one outlook, their outlook in the outer world. Let's look at the researchers who are interacting with my research, and I can probably even connect with them at some point. Another sort of outlook would be, I have my own data. So a lot of our clients, they have a lot of their own in-house data information that they have been collecting over years. But in a lot of cases, they are not using this data as a one sort of big system, right? Different teams have different bits and pieces, information about like their individual, like their specific 10 articles or this specific group of healthcare practitioners that they are talking to. But on a company level, a lot of people would want to sort of, like globalize this, create the holistic picture. And that's where our data and the work of Carlos, Mike, and other our data scientists come in place, that we can provide our data and merge it with a company's data. That's how companies can not only have the outlook in the outside world, what's happening outside, but in a lot of cases, and this is the most interesting feedback that I probably heard from our clients, is that how much more they learn about their own researchers. It is really fascinating sometimes to see, oh, I didn't even know that one of my colleagues actually published like another 3 articles in collaboration with another like 3 groups of our researchers, just because I'm focused on my like one single thing, and that's perfectly fine. People are usually busy with what they have. So again, sometimes it is like really interesting to get this feedback too, that first of all, the company have a chance to learn more about like their own researchers, and only after that connect these researchers with someone else outside.
Oh, so not only identifying the external audience that might be useful or interesting, but maybe identifying the appropriate internal resources to have the conversations with those external DOLs. So Carlos, does it drive you crazy when you have data from 4 different departments and 40 different teams, and each team has coded the data differently? Or now you can somehow use the magic of machine learning to say, let's heal all this together and heal all this together with the external resources? I mean, is that how it works? Or do you still look at that and just shake your head and cry a single tear?
I cry several tears. No, I'm kidding. No, it's usually quite straightforward because we don't need a lot of data to start the process. Like it can be a list of publications or a list of researchers that we can match. But a lot of the times what we, or it can, as a lot of times can be a single therapeutic area or a product, for example. And then giving a whole, because like, for example, dimensions, we have all, besides publications and all the rest of the data, there's like links to affiliations, etc. And sometimes you can segment it using that. And that's where Julia mentioned, like sometimes they discover things about their own company or their own team that they didn't know, or it was a surprise to them. And it can be as simple as like, oh, has been my research cited by patents this many times, etc. It's been like about their research usage or something, or even like inside social media, like how much attention like was he getting or is he getting, etc., etc. But it's really interesting that Julia mentioned, because for example, inside companies we can also use all this information to classify and to not predict, but create trajectories of leadership and emerging research. So for example, it's very good to find early career people, either academic or inside the company or inside the corporate, who are on the ascending trend, like in terms, and we combine again the data that we have, not only the research, the data, but like the attention and the impact that research is creating, to build a trajectory for that researcher. So we will be able to say, okay, inside this pool of 10,000 researchers with a publication age of like less than 10 or 15 years, these are the most likely to become leaders in specific fields, etc., etc.
That's neat. And this is, well, first of all, it strikes me that there's a lot of really neat creativity in how you apply this machine learning. I never would have thought to go to their affiliations, you know. So maybe you hypothesize through your machine learning that someone is an oncologist, and then you see all these profiles and you can see that they, you know, belong to ASH or you know, a gastroenterology society or something like that, their affiliations, and then you have more information about them. You know, it seems like machine learning is A, only as good as the data, but B, also only as good as the, you know, the human understanding to ask the right questions in the right way.
Oh yeah, and especially now with the getting back to the artificial intelligence, this whole new job category being created, which not sure if you ever heard of it, but it's like the prompt creators, prompt engineers, which is a very fancy way to say people that know how to ask the machine questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, don't take us down that rabbit hole, Carlos. We've got a lot to talk about. But I also think you don't even have to answer this, but I can imagine, wouldn't it be cool if you could use this same learning internally, Julia, as you brought up, to identify the rising stars within a company? And I'm not sure exactly what sort of, I don't know, creative, cool metrics you would use to do that. It probably wouldn't just be research citations and the impact factor and the altmetric. But boy, if you could find a way to turn that same approach internally and identify the rising stars, I imagine that would be neat. But all right, so let's leave it there for today. Carlos and Julia, thank you for joining us. To learn more about how your company can partner with Digital Science, visit digital-science.com. MAPS members, don't forget to subscribe. And we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Medical Affairs Professional Society podcast series, Elevate.